Welcome to the Home Care Hub, a podcast series for the Home Care Advocacy Network. HCAN is a business format franchise for senior living providers who want to operate a successful home care line of business and a great opportunity for any entrepreneur who wants to own their own home care franchise. To connect with us, visit HCANthrive.com today.
And welcome to the Home Care Hub podcast series for the Home Care Advocacy Network. My name is Mark Goetz, President and CEO of the Home Care Advocacy Network. Today, we're delighted to have Dr. Aaron Blight. Dr. Blight has been on the show a few times. Today, what we'd like to talk to Dr. Blight about is what is the optimal environment for great caregiving culture? And today, we really want to challenge our listeners to think past some of kind of their own platitudes even. So like when you think about just life in general, someone approaches you if you have kids and they say, hey, your kid did this. And you're always, people are like, well, that couldn't be my kid. My kid didn't do that. Or if you're working for an organization that has great values that are stated, you would always say, well, my organization has great values. And so there's kind of those table stakes that people have where we have to kind of get past, you know, our own defensiveness to crawl under the hood and say, what really, though, makes great caregiving culture? So you may have a great culture on paper or with certain people in the organization and great goals, but that is really different than having great caregiving culture. So in the world of home care, the caregiving culture that is surrounding your office is critical for recruiting and retention efforts of caregivers who are providing services that are anywhere from companionship and respite care, personal care services, and dementia care services that are delivered one-on-one to senior clients. So it's really important that you really understand the culture behind the business and that effort that you're exerting as an individual and as a business. So we're going to talk to Dr. Blight today. Dr. Blight, welcome.
Hi, Mark. Thank you. It's great to be with you again today.
Yeah, here we are again. I love it. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Aaron, for those that maybe haven't heard about you or don't know about you. Tell us, who is Dr. Aaron Blight? And then you have a company called Caregiving Kinetics. We'd love to hear about that as well.
So I am the author of a new book, When Caregiving Calls, Guidance as You Care for a Parent, Spouse, or Aging Relative. And that book comes after over 20 years of service in the caregiving space as a national healthcare policy leader, family caregiver, home care company owner, and a scholar and student of caregiving. My doctoral degree is actually in human and organizational learning. So I've talked, you know, when we're talking about organizational culture, that's something that is right up my alley, coupled with caregiving. So I love this topic today.
That's great. Well, I have my bachelor's in organizational communication. So I just have like two more rungs I have to climb up to get to where you're at. So, Aaron, almost everyone says they have a great culture inside of aging services, right? If you talk to somebody and you say, hey, describe your culture, if they're having a positive employee experience or even a mediocre one, they'll be proud to talk about how great their culture is. So most people who are attracted to aging services as a career are very well-meaning. They want to make a difference, which is great. Sometimes still there are big disconnects between the environment a caregiver prefers to work in versus the environment they're forced to work in. So what we'd like to discuss are the preferred qualities of an office, even this idea of having an office. So we're really coming at it from the perspective of a professional caregiver working inside of a home care business with that statement, or even a leader that great caregivers like to work for. So you may think you have a great office, but if you have one person that caregivers have to report to, and that's not a great experience, but you think that it is, that's going to be a big problem for you and your business. So what we'd like to discuss is the home care environment, which allows for one-on-one care versus the more task-oriented environments of potentially larger institutions as well as part of the discussion. So I'm going to kick it off. You have great experience and perspective when it comes to caregiving. You know, let's talk about the home care environment versus a community or facility or a hospital environment and how they differ?
Yeah, so I think one of the big differences between home care and a facility is the ratio of caregivers to clients or residents. So, you know, in a senior living facility, for example, you have one aide who is on the floor and is providing services to 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 16 residents who are in that whole wing. And so that ratio of 1 to 10 or 1 to 12 is pretty significant. That singular aide is stretched thinner and thinner as those ratios get higher. Whereas in home care, the ratio of caregiver to client is 1 to 1. There's one caregiver and one client. And that enables the caregiver to spend a lot more time with the client, right?
That's right.
Not only is the caregiver delivering on the tasks of care that the client needs, but the caregiver really is also having the ability to invest time to develop a relationship with the client. So in a facility-based setting, it may not be intended, but it's just the result. There's a lot more task-oriented services. And in a home care environment, it is the tasks, but also the relationship. So it's more of a relationship-oriented environment.
On that note, we pulled some stats on home care versus other environments, whether you're a senior living community or if you're more of a what we would consider a facility or like a hospital environment. And it's actually 1 on 23 is the average for those other environments. Wow. Inside of senior living or, to a lesser extent, a hospital environment. We're really kind of focusing on a senior living environment. And then, you know, one of the things that we let's just talk a little bit more about the environment. So typically as well within like one of the real challenges with home care caregiving is that you're really operating, generally speaking, a decentralized workforce that is doing a lot of traveling as well. So going to and from clients, and oftentimes there isn't necessarily the guarantee of hours. There are hours and there are service opportunities when that organization has clients. It's not as contract based as a senior living community. So that is one of the marks maybe against the home care environment versus a community or a senior living environment. But the trade-off is the opportunity to provide one-on-one care oftentimes isn't there. You're not relegated is too strong to say, but you're forced into that one-on-many versus one-on-one situation.
Yes, I agree with that, Mark. And that kind of predictability of hours is something that most caregivers are very concerned about. You know, people want to have enough hours to generate the income that they need for themselves and their families. So in a facility setting, the schedule is probably 7 to 3, 3 to 11, 11 to 7. You fill one of those shifts and you can be guaranteed 40 hours a week. You do that shift 5 days a week and, you know, you've got your 40 hours. But in a home care environment, your schedule is dictated by the needs of clients wherever they live, whenever they need service. And so you can't be guaranteed 5 days a week, 8 hours a day. It's just not structured that way. So being able to generate a full 40 hours a week can be a little bit of a hurdle for some home care providers and their caregivers.
We've been having some of these discussions with senior living leaders, helping them understand that if they have so we're advocating for senior living providers in part of our business model to have them or help them, empower them to have their own home care business under their own brand. And when they do that, they're able to establish a base of caregivers that are going to serve their captive audience on campus. So you'll have one-on-one care in a home care environment that focuses on matching, on client success and kind of consumer directed desires of the family, which is normally a a 45 to 65 year old female who's making some of the decisions or most of the decisions for mom's care. Just, these are just statistics. So you really get the blend of both worlds. You have then this team of caregivers that are able to provide one-on-one care to the family inside of a community where there's potentially a greater stability of hours, and they don't have to travel around as much, as at least for part of the team. Now, the goal with HCAN is to help extend that business model then off their campus as well, so that they can establish relationships with clients sooner in the process, just like every home care company has an opportunity to do. That's really the strength that we're trying to blend in the environments with HCAN. But still, when we talk caregiving culture and we're trying to define it, when I say great caregiving culture, what I mean is, what are the factors and qualities that are present when you see a great leader or someone who manages and leads caregivers who are in the field?
Well, Mark, I love that question. And when you introduced this episode, as you were kicking it off, you mentioned something about value statements or mission statements, you know, and sometimes there's a presumption among senior leaders that, oh, we've got this great mission statement, it sounds wonderful, or we've written our values down and we put them on a poster, and so that's our culture. And you know, the espoused or the stated values are a reflection of culture in some ways, but they don't always represent the true culture of the organization. To really get at the underlying culture of an organization, you have to get to the assumptions that are tacit. These are assumptions about the way that the world works, the way that the organization works, that are not even necessarily expressed. This is, it's just what is. So if you have those written value statements posted on a wall and they sound wonderful, you're saying all the right things, but in action, you're contradicting those, then the assumptions of your employees are going to be different. They will not be aligned with the values that you've expressed in that value statement that's hanging on the wall. And the culture will evolve accordingly within the organization. So one of the things that I think is really unique about care organizations that touches upon this issue of culture is how we define care and how we use the term care kind of interchangeably. We talk about care as a noun, and we also talk about care as a verb. And so in a care organization, are we about caring the noun, or are we about caring the verb? You know, so care, the noun care, is the activity or the skill or the profession of someone who is looking after others who need help or they need protection. So care, the noun, is that service that's being delivered, right? But when we talk about care, the verb, to care for someone else means that you are genuinely concerned about that other person. You're interested in them and you want them to be happy and well. And so, is a care organization focused on care the noun or care the verb? And that's a question I think for leaders to ask themselves. I mean, doing a little bit of self-reflection and being honest and saying, you know, in our care organization, the way that we approach the business of care, are we all about care the noun? Or do we incorporate care the verb into everything that we're doing? And I think that that can start to reveal a little bit about your organizational culture.
That's fascinating, because I think just assessing what we're seeing in the marketplace as well, if an organization has attempted home care in the past, when we're talking a senior living community or another larger organization, oftentimes there's an impulse to add this effort as kind of a subtext of what the director of nursing does, because at the top of the heap inside of a care organization who oversees the higher licensed care that happens, it's maybe kind of intuitive that it would go there. But the actual model is a service model where there's matching, special software, consumer directed. It's a choice and it's a purchase by the family, and they want it to be tailored, which is actually very different. And when you think about care versus, you know, the noun versus the verb, very interesting to have that as kind of a backdrop to what you said. It causes a lot of kind of new connections for me as we have those discussions.
Yeah, I think that when we think about care, the noun, the orientation of care, the noun, is on the responsibility that you have to deliver the appropriate supports to the care receiver, right? But the focus, the orientation of care, the verb, is on the relationship between the caregiver and the care receiver, yeah, right?
Right.
And the focus on in care, the noun, is the act of caring. But the focus in care, the verb, is the motivation behind that action, right? Why are you caring? Do you genuinely care about this person, who the care receiver, or, you know, are you just doing it for money?
Yeah, right.
And the potential result here, if you are exclusively focused on care, the noun, the potential outcome could be that your residents, your clients, your patients could just feel like they're objectified. They're just a number. They're just a paycheck, a dollar sign, revenue. But if you are really focused on care, the verb, as well, the potential outcome for your patients is that they're feeling human. It's the humanization of the care receiver, and they feel dignified and supported and cared for, you know, so cared about. And so in the business of caring, whether it's a senior living provider or it's a hospital or it's a home care agency or a hospice provider, you know, are you focused on care, the noun, or are you focused on care, the verb? Are you able to really balance those two? Because I think that in the end, we as human beings, this is a business of humans helping other humans. And so we want to be competently paid. We want to be competently cared for. We pay healthcare providers for competence, but we really want compassion. We want to feel like we're being cared about in addition to being cared for.
So you ran a home care business for a lot of years, and you've been in the business, and you've observed a lot of other business owners and people who are, you know, lead caring organizations. When, you know, if a caregiver were to say, this is a great place to work, and then they were able to, if you were able to look under the hood of that business, I'd be interested in what you think would be representative of that statement inside of any caring or any care organization where the caregiver says, this is a great place to work. What's under the hood of that company?
Honestly, I think that it starts with care, the verb. Because I think that those caregivers, you know, they know if you care about them. They know in the way that you interact with them, the way that you talk about them, the way that you recognize them, the way that you reward them, the basis for any kind of recognition programs. And so if everything is really oriented toward money and toward the business side of being a care organization, you know, the caregivers will sense that, and they may think, you know, this is all just about making money. They don't care about us as human beings. And I'm just, you know, I'm just a robot, or I'm just, you know, I'm just filling a shift, but the people in this organization don't really care about us. And so I think that regardless of what those espoused values say on the wall,
Yeah, right? That's right. Yep.
And speaking of what's on the wall, you know, in an organization, and I've kind of presented this question to care organization leaders in the past. When you walk into your office, what do you see on the walls? You know, do you see sales charts? You know, when I think of sales charts, for example, I think of car dealerships.
Yeah, that's right.
Every time you go into a car dealership, there's a sales chart. And what kind of reputation do car salesmen have, right? I mean, there's a reason for that. And when you go buy a car, you're primed and you're ready for that. And I've walked into offices of care organizations where, you know, the most visible, prominent displays are sales charts. I'm not, you know, those have a place in any business, of course.
Sure.
But you don't see other things on the walls that reflect the relationships that are developing between caregivers and clients and that are recognizing and embracing the caregivers and what they do. You just see the sales charts and the numbers and the revenue. So if you're a caregiver and you walk into that office and that's what you see around on the walls, what are you going to think? What is that telling you about where you belong in the organization? And so that's just an example of something. But when the caregivers feel that they are just commodities, that they're just part of this business transaction, then they're not going to be as engaged and as willing to go the extra mile for your organization.
Yeah.
But if they feel like they're valued, they're appreciated, they're supported, they're recognized, that they're cared about, they will go the extra mile for you. They will be loyal. They're more likely to stay. They'll pick up that extra shift that you're scrambling to fill.
Yeah.
And so that's how you build a culture, I think, of caring within a care organization. Is it's through your employees. Because, you know, everybody says, oh, well, who do you care for? This is a question. Who do you care for? Well, you care for your clients, right? That's the whole purpose of the care organization. But you care for your clients through your caregivers. So who do you care about? Do you care about your caregivers as much as your clients? Or are they just commodities to you?
That is really good. Yeah, I think when I've walked into organizations where it's just kind of natural, like, the argument is, you know, we're just a very numbers driven organization. Oftentimes those things can be just a sign of that particular leader's pain. And they're like, you know what, I'm going to share this with you. So there is like the good intentions of what gets measured, gets managed. It needs to be out there, certainly. But there's also that sense of, boy, you really have to check yourself. Like, are you becoming too focused on that and not, you know, are you losing some of the great qualities like empathy, understanding, adaptability that we've...
It is a balance, isn't it?
It really is. I think about when we were evaluating our first franchise office and who would lead that, we were fortunate enough to come together with somebody who was a funeral director, and we had actually received his services as a family twice because he was so good and so empathetic and so understanding during that process. We really knew that he understood how to be empathetic, how to walk people through an intense discussion and one that was wrought with emotion. And his wife had lived that with him through, you know, just very similar to home care. It's an on-call culture. It's a, you work when you absolutely need to, and some families request you specifically. So we found a really great care mix of two very empathetic individuals that we believed first and foremost could attract caregivers because of their empathy and just their sheer care for others. Because most of the other business things we have tools for, we have software for, it walks you through, you know, how to run a business. We have marketing services that will that will do a lot of the marketing online for you. But one of the things we could not train was empathy.
I think about your franchisee and his experience as a funeral director, you know, that there is a transactional business element to that. Everybody understands that. But I think when you lead out with that empathy and that genuine concern for the other person, people feel supported and appreciated and recognized and valued and validated, affirmed, you know, and then the business kind of takes care of itself. The business side of it, people understand it's a business and you got to pay for these things. And they're very willing to, you know, to pay for the things that that they came to you for. But if you think about the opposite, just think for a transaction where you start off with just the business and there's no empathy and you're just getting right down to the numbers and, you know, what everything costs and the other side of the transaction doesn't feel that sense of empathy from right. you. Are they going to do business with you?
Yeah, they're probably going to interview a lot more.
Exactly.
Than just you.
And it's the same with caregivers. You know, when you think about what home care is and the structure of home care, you really are selling shifts to your caregivers. Every time that you have an open shift and you reach out to a caregiver and ask them to fill that particular assignment for that particular day, you're selling that shift to that caregiver. And, you know, are you being considerate of their personal situation and listening to them? Or are you just mandating?
Yeah.
I think, you know, looking at the way that you treat your caregivers as being similar to the way that you treat your clients, I think that's a very important thing. I think of in my home care company, I had a scheduler who was sweet as could be with the caregivers. She was so kind to them all of the time. And, you know, they would drop into the office and she would always make time to talk to them and hear what was going on in their lives. And because she made that investment in her relationships with each of her caregivers, when she had a last minute call off or a shift that popped up that she needed to fill unexpectedly, she could reach out and much more effectively get caregivers to commit to take those assignments. And, you know, I had another scheduler that would get frustrated every time that something didn't go right with a caregiver. And I watched her repeatedly slamming down the phone after talking to a caregiver and then just going off about how all of the caregivers are terrible. And, you know, why do these caregivers behave the way they do? And, you know, that type of ongoing discussion and framing and mentality of caregivers caused her to just generalize. You know, it was one caregiver that,
yeah,
called out or whatever. But now it's all caregivers. All caregivers are bad, you know, and when your team starts talking that way and viewing caregivers that way, it will seep into other aspects of the business and the caregivers will know that that's how they're being perceived. And that goes directly to the organizational culture.
Yep. That is so, so helpful. I appreciate you sharing that from your experience and coaching someone who is in an operational environment. Like I remember, I liken it to when we had very young children, you know, in the home and, you know, dinner was nearly ready and you had diapers that needed to be changed and you had, you know, someone in the home who was responsible. You know, oftentimes for me, I worked full time and my wife was home. So very busy operationally at home. You know, if I were to try to, you know, coach her in that environment, that wouldn't necessarily go well. Like, So that idea of, and similar to home care, you are operationally challenged. I mean, you get a sense, like a lot of people have been in that environment at home where it's like a pressure cooker. And that's the way it is in home care environments as well. At times it is a pressure cooker because needs come up, you know, aging services has a way of, and people who are going through aging challenges, those problems have a way of just popping up when they want to. I guess what I'm trying to say is working with people who are frustrated like that, you know, who are in those operationally challenging situations is a skill as well that the kind of the next level of the organization has to try to develop and bring down, and how you create a calmer head in that environment will ultimately lead to better success at the caregiver and client level.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this is a good discussion, Dr. Blay. Anything else that you'd like to add on our discussion today? Super helpful, I think, for everybody listening.
I think that we've really touched on some important parts of organizational culture in care organizations, Mark. Mm-hmm. I would just invite anyone who is in a leadership capacity who might be listening to maybe just take a little bit of time and quietly walk around your organization and observe, look for evidences of your organizational culture, the things that are not explicitly said, but are silently communicated, and try to look at those assumptions about the world, about the organization, about the employees, about the care receivers that are being communicated indirectly through those things that you observe. If you just devote 30 minutes to doing that, to studying your organizational culture, removing any of your preconceived notions,
yeah,
it can be very illuminating.
That's awesome. That's a great challenge, Dr. Blight. That could be a whole different topic for another day. That observing, exactly. Like getting a group of leaders who we challenge to observe their own corporate culture honestly, and then come back and share your results and an action plan. So for another time, that's a great idea. I just stole it from you. Maybe you can be on and can facilitate that. Dr. Blight, thank you so much for being on the program today.
Thank you, Mark.
Until we meet again.
Thank you for listening to the Home Care Hub, a podcast series for the Home Care Advocacy Network. HCAN is a business format franchise for senior living providers who want to operate a successful home care line of business, and a great opportunity for any entrepreneur who wants to own their own home care franchise. To connect with us, visit hcanthrive.com today.